Alex Ferrara, and I'm taking a deep dive into the world of beauty and women's health. I'm asking all the questions and trying every product and trend so you don't have to. Get ready for a little glam and a lot of info. This is Glow Up and Speak Out. Today I'm sitting down with Annie Hayward, an internationally published fashion stylist best known for her ability to translate high-end fashion into achievable looks for all budgets and all body types. Annie works with clients all over the country, like Chicago, LA, San Diego, Nashville, and Dallas. She has spent over 16 years in the fashion industry. She has worked in retail, personal styling, personal shopping, image consulting, and on catalog and editorial photo shoots. Annie has been featured in many fashion media publications, including Vogue Italia, Photo Vogue, Nashville Lifestyle, and in Martha Stewart's wedding magazine. Please welcome Annie. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Alexandra. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Okay, so I want to just quickly drop us into the world and into your life and into who you are, because I don't know if everyone really knows what a stylist is. Like, I think people think it's really fun and playing dress up, and it is, but there's so much to it. So What is a stylist? What do they do? And what type of stylist are you?
Yes, that's such a great question. So I am a personal fashion stylist. So there are many different types of stylists. There are celebrity stylists. There are commercial editorial stylists. Like when we throw the word editorial around, I know you're familiar, but for viewers and listeners, it's, you know, like think like Vogue or Harper's Bazaar, like print ads, kind of high fashion couture. I certainly dabble in all those things, but I work with real women. So I work with a lot of executives and entrepreneurs, a lot of CEOs, COOs. These are women who are juggling multiple different hats. They're on boards. They are philanthropic. They're involved in charity, the charity circuit. These are women who are traveling constantly, juggling motherhood and business. I don't actually dress many. I have stylists on my team who dress a lot of like real housewives. But I work with a lot of like really high powered women. So I do personal styling. So basically I help my clients identify and refine and elevate their own personal senses of style. A lot of women aren't really sure where to begin. Like a lot of women have a very defined sense of style and aesthetic. They know what kind of speaks to them stylistically. But a lot of my clients come to me for help in that department. They're looking to outsource and delegate. So this is kind of a norm for the women that I work with. They're kind of masters at delegating and outsourcing. And that's something I really learned from working from women of that caliber, that you can accomplish more kind of when you are juggling all these different balls. You can accomplish more when you learn to kind of say no, like and prioritize and be able to delegate and outsource. So that's really where I come in. I take all the guesswork and the stress out of getting dressed in the morning. I help women, like I said, identify, refine, and polish their sense of style. And then I take all the grunt work that for them. So I do all their shopping for them. I inventory their closets. I edit their closets seasonally. If they've lost a significant amount of weight or gained a significant amount of weight or had a double mastectomy or maybe have had surgery, they've gone through some sort of massive life change. I come in and I work with them to kind of lean into that new self or that new stage of life, that new body, give them tips and tricks for dressing with confidence, for dressing their particular frame, their particular body type. I think a lot of women feel really daunted and overwhelmed when it comes to like, okay, this I might carry weight in this way, shape, or form. I might have gained 50 pounds because of postpartum depression or something. And then it's easy to feel really overwhelmed when getting dressed and going shopping. Like I like to think of myself as I'm a style coach. So I just like to be, you know, you're working with a therapist on your mental health and kind of improving and healing and growing in that department, or you might be working with a personal trainer or a dietitian to achieve some health goals. You would be hiring me, one, to like outsource and delegate, two, to like refine, polish, elevate. But three, it's also coaching. It's confidence coaching. It is imbuing my clients with confidence. It's giving them the tools and the knowledge and the wherewithal to be able to know how to dress their body type with confidence and to be able to step out with pride in their clothing, because clothing is really powerful. It tells a story about who we are. And I think I always begin consults with clients by asking, like, what's the story you want to tell? How do you want to show up in the world? How do you want to be perceived? And I think clothing, dressing with intention and dressing intentionally is really powerful. And it's a really transformative thing to lean into. So, I think at the end of the day, that's what my sort of styling is. My sort of styling magic is that I help imbue my clients with confidence. And that looks different from woman to woman based on who the woman is and her own, like I said, her own kind of, style, personality, and profile, her body type, her age, her budget, her lifestyle. There's no one size fits all when it comes to styling. And I like to think that my brand, I worked really hard to make it like accessible. So like, I don't, somebody said to me recently, they were like, you're like a stylist for the masses. I like that, I think. But I think it's important to make styling accessible, because it's not just for size zero, size two billionaires. It's not just for celebrities. It's not just for models.
And I also think that a lot of people, if they're not in this world, they don't understand how many different types of stylists there are and how nuanced this can be. Yes. Because when I was talking to you, I found it so interesting. You have such a different skill set and passion than I had when I was working as a makeup artist and a stylist. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed working on a corporate commercial where it was strictly business, where the person I was styling, I mean, of course they were taken into consideration, but it was mostly working with the director and like, it was not personal. And and when I was a makeup artist, I specifically did not do weddings for that reason. I liked the strictly business. And it's so interesting. You love like really getting in there and getting someone's story. And I just think that's so cool. And you kind of are. You're probably dealing with a million different types of personality types. And it's very intimate. And you're, you know, hearing someone's vulnerable, you know, insecurities or feelings about their body. And that's a cool skill set that you have, to be able to handle that and do it well and be there for someone.
That's very much what it is. I think personal styling is just that. It's highly intimate. It requires a lot of trust and high level of communication and back and forth and dialogue between myself and my client. And you have to establish that rapport first and really build up those chips and let them know that like, this is a safe space. And that's where like, I do like to talk about, like, I'm like, I get it. I've been there. Like, I've had my own struggles with disordered eating. I've had my own struggles with my weight, up, down, body dysmorphia, rampant. And so I like to kind of, you know, I don't want to ever force that narrative or that story on someone, but I like to kind of like even the playing field and say like, I see you. I get it. Like, I'm not coming to you and meeting you as a person who's like arrived and just like looks like this. It's like, it's an ongoing journey, and I am not immune to those insecurities. I'm not immune to that body dysmorphia. I've been there. So it's, I think it really is. It really does reveal a lot of insecurities for women.
And this is exactly why I thought you were so interesting. We met at this Women Entrepreneur Networking event. We had a short conversation.
Yes.
But in that conversation, I meet you for the first time and I'm like, I'm of course making like a quick snap, you know, not judgment, but like decisions about who you are. You're very, very small, blonde. And I'm thinking, cool, stylist. And then I hear you've said, oh my gosh, I have been every size from a 4 to an 18. I'm so passionate about plus size, fashion, about inclusivity. And my eyes just lit up, because I thought, wow, this is the person that you, a woman, would want to go to feel safe. Because in my experience, I started in musical theater, and at that time, early on in my early 20s, I was dancing a ton, and I was probably a size 8-10, which for my body was small. And I had this horrifying experience where I was hired as a dancer, and the costumer could not fit me into a pre-made costume that they'd had for other dancers and kind of, and she was like, you're a dancer? You're like, couldn't believe that I was a dancer and was that size. And she's like, I'm going to have to build you a, I'm going to have to make you a costume. And, you know, this, you know, 35-year-old Alex would have been like, great, thank you so much. Yeah, this is my body. So, you know, and then you're the costumer and I was hired and here we are. But 22-year-old Alex, horrified, obviously, horrified. I've also had experiences with teeny, teeny, tiny, petite women stylists as a plus size model who someone just says plus size and maybe there wasn't a budget for a fitting or there wasn't time. And all the sizes are 16, 18, and I'm a size 12, and everyone is so confused over why. You know what I mean? So you are so overqualified mentally, emotionally, with life experience to handle what you were saying, the size fluctuations, because as women, we have hormone stuff, we have babies, we have, you don't stay the same size. And maybe for a while postpartum, you're one size, but you still want to feel good. You know, it doesn't mean we should hide away in sweatpants. Or for me, I have a thyroid thing. And with those fluctuations, I used to, when I was younger, be like, oh, I'm on like the higher end. I'm just gonna, you know, wear a sweatshirt and leggings. But it's, that's not good for us mentally.
Right. It's not.
Right. It's not. So can you talk a little bit about your own, as much as you want to share your own journey with weight fluctuation, body dysmorphia, however much you'd like to share?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have a varied and nuanced path with disordered eating, and I've increasingly opened up more and more about it over the years. And but I think, you know, I grew up in the South, and there is a lot of emphasis, I would say even more so in the Midwest. I mean, we already have to contend with so much as women, like societal pressure, and then with the advent of social media, the comparison game is so rampant. And I think it brings up a host of insecurities for us and childhood traumas as women. But that all those messages were kind of compounded and reinforced growing up in the South. You know, you're kind of told, it's implicit in the way you're raised, be tiny, be small, be sweet, be pretty, stay little, stay small, you know, minimize your voice and, take up less of a footprint. And that's still rampant, that way of thinking. That paradigm is very much still alive and kicking in the South. So I think there was just, that was always in the back of my head. My grandmothers were constantly, you know, making comments about, you know, are you going to eat that second bowl of ice cream? And like, ooh, that's a big portion, you know, like, you know, men don't lack big butts, Annie, they don't lack big butts. And like, you know, there's just always some sort of comment and like, you know, like, oh, I don't, my grandmother would be like, I don't eat bread. Oh gosh. And then you're like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't eat the bread either, you know? And, I think it was already just this tape that was playing in the back of my head. And then, you know, growing up, it's like you know, you're introduced to diet culture, like in middle school. And, you know, I dabbled a little bit in like withholding and, you know, counting calories. And I think that my relationship with food really like ebbed and flowed. And I dabbled in a lot of those sorts of things, like withholding, binging and purging, you know, counting calories, over-exercising. I was never overweight as a child, and no one in my family struggles with their weight, but I started to struggle with my weight in terms of it going up and down and really fluctuating in my 20s. I think when I graduated from college, I just kind of learned that food was a really powerful way to anesthetize and to self-medicate. And that became a coping mechanism of mine. And so then my weight, you know, would go, the scale would go up, and then, you know, my weight would fluctuate, and then I would be upset about it. And so then rather than like, you know, eating intuitively or like meeting with a dietitian or maybe like making small changes or small adjustments, I would kind of revert to the withholding or like the purging. And so it wasn't it was certainly a love-hate relationship I had with food in my 20s, and I think that carried on into my 30s. I think before I met my ex-husband, I had done, my weight ballooned again, and it wasn't causing health issues at that point, but I did Weight Watchers, and that was successful for me. I lost, I think, like 60 pounds, and but at that point, I think I was doing it more so, like, this was like 7 years ago. I think at that point, I was losing the weight and doing Weight Watchers purely because, for vanity reasons. Like, I had nothing to do with my health. I had nothing to do with my energy, my mental health, had nothing to do with like how I felt. It was more like, I've gotten fat, I've let myself go, I think I need to lose weight. And then I ended up, during the course of my marriage, there were issues in our marriage that plagued me and troubled me. And I once again turned to food. And I was also diagnosed with severe postpartum depression after having my son, but it was a delayed diagnosis. So I did not find out that I had postpartum until 18 months after having my son.
Wow.
So that whole time was the first 18 months of his life, I was very sick. I was just not myself. I was crippled, riddled with postpartum depression, with intrusive thoughts, and I couldn't get out of bed. It was very debilitating. I had a really difficult time connecting with my son, and I just didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know what was wrong with me. My ex-husband didn't know what was wrong. Thankfully, I ended up reaching out and asking for help and getting the tools and the healing help that I needed and a correct diagnosis. But unfortunately, during that time, I reverted back to a lot of self-medicating and a lot of maladaptive coping mechanisms. And I think we can all relate to that. But it's like, you know, the carbs and the wine and the pasta, the pizza. Those were like my little buddies and my little best friends at night. And that was like my solace. And I really didn't think twice about it until I met with my doctor and did an extensive blood panel and realized I was borderline pre-diabetic. And also during that time, my blood pressure, I had been diagnosed with preeclampsia when I was pregnant. And the blood pressure continued on, like postpartum, the high blood pressure. And it just got higher and higher and higher and higher to the point where my doctor was like, it is dangerously high. We have to keep you on a very high dose, 200 milligrams of propranolol, to keep you from stroking out. And so at this point, it's like, it's not even about like the way I looked or like the weight gain or like the image. It really was like causing physical health problems for me. So like I said, like blood pressure through the roof. I found out I was borderline pre-diabetic, and that was a wake up call for me. My aunt on my mom's side had her first heart attack when she was 37. And my aunt is like 5'7", 5'8". She's always been slender. She exercises. She eats really well. But she has chronic heart issues and has had 4 or 5 heart attacks since she was 37. And she's in her early 50s.
Oh, my gosh.
For me, you know, 3 years ago, it's like I was 37. My 40th was like looming. And my blood pressure was through the roof. I had hypothyroidism, postpartum depression. I couldn't get out of bed. I had no energy. I was coping with food and with wine and was borderline pre-diabetic, blood pressure through the roof. And it all kind of came to a head for me. And I realized I'm the same age that Beth was, my aunt was, when she had her first heart attack. And I'm even at higher risk for a stroke or heart attack or heart attack because of my blood pressure and because of my diabetes. And because I was at that point, the highest weight that I'd ever been. And it was impacting my health. So for me, that was like this come to Jesus with myself. And my mom even sat me down. It was hard to hear, but she was like, I love that you're so body positive. I love that you like lean into it and you own it. And you, you know, you own your body and you own your curves. But she was like, I am seriously concerned that you will have a heart attack because they do run in our family. And I just remember breaking down and being like, it's time. Like, it's time for me to do the work, to go inward, to seek help and healing mentally, emotionally, physically. It's time for me to address all of this. And it begins with my inward healing. It begins with my mental health, with that postpartum depression diagnosis, finally. But when I began to address that and I got on the correct medication and started doing therapy and some trauma work and trauma healing, that came first. And then I pivoted out from there and started working on my physical health, like my heart health, my blood pressure, my diabetes. And then the kind of whole weight loss journey has happened, but I don't even like to talk about it in those terms. For me, it's more like it is really truly about reclaiming my health, like mentally, emotionally, physically. And I like to share that story because I do think, right, like women who haven't followed along with me, who don't know me personally, who haven't followed my journey, it's easy to be like, what does she know? Like, right, like small blonde, like what does she know? And it's like, oh, I know.
I know. And I got that from you in 5 minutes in our conversation. And I just could not wait to hear more. And mm-hmm. I think that story is so helpful for women to hear because, mm-hmm. like you said, it wasn't about the outward appearances, yeah. what you other people thought of you or what you thought when you looked in the mirror, even. It was literally like, wow, my blood work. I have all of these things I'm being diagnosed with all of the sudden.
Yeah.
This is my life.
Yeah.
And I cannot imagine how overwhelmed you were getting all of that information mm-hmm. and talking to your mom and what those first steps were like. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool that the first steps that you took were the inward instead of the outward, like not reverting to food restriction, right. disordered eating, like you went to the healing of the old trauma, the inward work first, which thank God, because now look at you, so happy and healthy.
You're so kind. I mean, it is, you know, appearances can be deceiving. I feel like, to be completely honest, there are still those like little voices and there are still remnants of course, those behaviors of course. And patterns. Like, it is, I think, a daily practice of like resurrecting the new self and like, you know, and implementing like my healthy coping mechanisms and leaning into those. But it's always a temptation to revert. And I've definitely had my stumbles along the way. I think self-growth, physical health, mental health is just a constant evolution and a constant refining process. Absolutely. And I've come a long way, and I am like happy and grateful to say, like, I am no longer pre-diabetic and I am no longer on high blood pressure medication. I'm out of the clear, you know, in that sense, like I've kind of eliminated some of the things that made me really high risk for stroke and for diabetes and for heart attack. That is true. And that is to be celebrated, but it's definitely not like, and I've arrived. People.
No. Oh my God. It never is. And I think that is something never you is. Think when you're younger. I remember when I was younger, I thought this is like 12, 13. I always had the age 25 in my head. And I was like, by 25, I am going to know like this and that. And my life is, you know, cause you think it's so old. Right. My life is going to be set up and I'm going to have all the, yes. And then it's going to be it. Like I will have arrived. Things will be right. done, wrapped in a bow. And literally the older you get, the more you realize it's literally the bow does not exist. The wrapping does not exist. It's always, always something. How long did it take you from like that moment of the lowest low to getting off the medications?
Yeah. That took about 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah. Took about 2 years.
Right.
Okay. I would say I've been kind of like holding steady, like in terms of, being off all the medication. I was at some point, I was on 10 different medications.
Wow.
Between antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication, mood stabilizers. I'm just letting it all hang out.
Please,
you know, propranolol, metformin, I mean, all the diabetes medication, all the blood pressure medication. I was just, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about this. I came across a photo recently, of me at my highest weight, and it was taken when I didn't realize someone was taking a photo of me, and I was just sitting on the beach in Michigan. When I look at that photo, It's like, I've shown that photo to people and they're like, no way. Like that people who didn't know me then, like, that's not you. Like I would have never guessed. And I'm like, you know, when I look at that photo, I don't feel disgust. I don't feel ashamed. I don't feel judgment for myself. I don't feel critical of my body. I think that is a woman that was pregnant with a lot of secrets and a lot of trauma. And she was secretly very unhappy. And I like can hold space for that woman, because I'm like, I had to go through all of that to get to where I am now. And I still haven't arrived. It's still like this healing, evolving journey. But like, I look back and again, it's just like, I don't have a critical eye towards myself, because I'm like, it's not about the weight. The No. weight to me was I can only speak for my own journey experience, but for me, the weight was like an outward manifestation of my inward reality.
Of course.
And I was very suffering silently. I was in an unhappy marriage and I was mentally not well. You know, I was struggling with crippling postpartum depression. So I look back and I'm like, that girl just needed to take some time for herself, you know?
It's just so cool that you can have so much compassion for yourself, because I think mm-hmm. that's what we all work towards. Mm-hmm. And just thank you so much for sharing all of that. It just really means a lot. And mm-hmm. I think it is your life experience is why you have this superpower to like get into people's personal lives and stories, which is just so cool. I just have to tell you about this amazing, gorgeous woman named Avani Nayak. She's the co-founder of Avani Derm Spa and Nayak Plastic Surgery, and you can head to episode 513 to learn more about her. Avani is a skincare expert, and she's the kind of gal who looks about 15 years younger than she actually is, but in the most natural, glowing way, so everyone always wants to know exactly what she's doing. Avani has her very own skincare line by Avani Derm Spa that is full of medical grade products that are fully backed by science, so they will really and truly change your skin. My sister-in-law has the best skin, and she is obsessed with Avani's Koji pads because they help with sunspots and texture, and they're also really great for hyperpigmentation. I personally love the Peptide Hydration Serum. It is a huge dose of oil-free moisture with peptides and hyaluronic acid, which we all need, and it's super light, so it's perfect for any skin type and for any skincare routine. One of the best things about this serum is that one bottle can literally last you 4 to 5 months, which is amazing. I'm also loving her Radiant Light Moisturizer. It feels like silk, and it's also jam-packed with all of these active ingredients that both target fine lines and protect your skin from environmental stressors. Ingredients like ceramides, peptides, green tea, resveratrol, and caffeine. So for 10% off of any of Avani's products, go to dermspastore.com and enter code GLOW10 at checkout. That is code GLOW10 at checkout at dermspastore.com for 10% off. And for more information, just scroll down to the bottom of the show notes for this episode. So I want to ask you, since you're so size inclusive, what are some brands for women who are size 12 to 18? Because my husband and I talk about this a lot, like my pre-pregnancy, healthy, like blood work good, front row of a dance cardio class size is 12.
Yeah.
And
that's like where you feel your best. That's where you're healthiest. You feel strongest.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, love it.
Uh-huh. And I always think if I'm the largest size at this store, or if I'm an extra large at this store, where is everyone shopping? And there's some short stores I can't even shop at, some higher end, like the Frankie shop. Like some stores only will go up to an 8-10.
Right.
So if I'm kind of the largest, if I'm an extra large at a Zara, where are the women who are 14 to size 14 to 20 supposed to shop? And my one answer to that when people ask me is ASOS, if they want, which is just like a quick, like I've been getting some maternity stuff from there because they have,
they go up,
you know, very size inclusive, but they also have maternity. But like where are we going? Where are the size 14 to 20 women shopping? Yeah.
The average woman in America today is 5'4 and a size 16. That's the average, the median size. And so why aren't retailers, designers, why are we not designing for that woman? Why don't we see, if that is the average size,
right?
It's a no-brainer that we should have access, copious amounts of that size and the sizes around it, knowing that that is the average size of a woman in America today. And the other thing I was thinking of, I feel like there's this underserved, like increasingly we're seeing like designers open up, you know, their sizings, you know, size inclusive brands debuting. We're seeing more and more plus models. We're seeing this body positivity movement that's been kind of happening the last, I'd say 6 or 7 years. But I think that there's this like little, midsection, I call them the in-betweenies. And they're actually like, there's like a subset of bloggers and influencers who call themselves in-betweenies, who've kind of coined that term, which I love. But it is that kind of like size 8, 10, 12, 14, where it's like, you might find that you don't have, like a store like Frankie Shop may not have like a large or an extra large, and you might need a larger and extra large, but maybe you're not like plus in the sense that like you're 16, 18, maybe Lane Bryant, that cut is it's too voluminous. And so I feel like I work with a lot of women in that contingency and that subset. And there's a lot of frustration because it's like, where are we going? Where are we looking? Why are we being overlooked? And I think we're starting to see more and more brands open up, like I said, and they're starting to consider the fact that like the average woman is more of a 14, 16 in America, but we still have a long way to go. So I have like listed that. I'm like, let's talk about all the brands.
Please. It's so helpful. Your point of view is so interesting.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us are like, if you just Google plus size clothing, it's like, you see the fast fashion retailers. So you see like Boohoo, you see, like a Fashion Nova Curve, ASOS Curve, H&M has Curve and Plus. I think what we haven't seen until recently are just brands that come out of the gate, like we're size inclusive. We go through size 18, 20, 22. And I think there's an argument that they need to go even higher. I think, why is it like capping at 22? Because there are women who live in even larger bodies. And it's like, what about the women that are size 28? They might be like, great, yay, you're a size inclusive brand. You only go up to a size 22. What about the women that are living in a size 28 body? So we still have a lot more work to do, I think, in that department, but we're making progress. We're making strides. And I like to focus on the positive and highlight it. Hopefully we can do that here. But so I think we're familiar with all those fast fashion retailers, but there are actually now a lot of designer and contemporary labels that are either plus labels, curve labels, or they are size inclusive. So Lafayette, New York is one. There's another one called Marina Rinaldi. So these are both lines.
I know her. Lines that yes, Marina Rinaldi.
You can find it like Saks, Neiman Marcus, Bloomingdale's. There's a couple other contemporary lines. I love Mara Hoffman, Vince, Ghani. Those are all lines that carry through size 20, 22. Veronica Beard is another one. So I actually just went to a brunch. The designers, the Veronica Beard line was having a trunk show here in St. Louis. And I got to go to a really intimate brunch with the two designers. And they're beautiful and they're leggy and tall and they look like, you know, New York women and just gorgeous. But they, what I do really admire about their brand is that it is size inclusive, because I have a lot of plus clients and I have a lot of in-betweeny clients who are size 8, 10, 12, 14. And they are like gobbling up Veronica Beard because they're like, finally, they're like, I want something that's like, I want a beautiful suit, well-made, structured, tailored suit made out of wool, made out of tweed. I don't want a polyester suit from Amazon or from Boohoo or from
Okay,
H&M.
So Veronica Beard, because yes, exactly, that was me. I was like, okay, so ASOS, but that's kind of like the fun trend, the top you want to try. But where is the investing in a really nice blazer that you'll have for 10 years? Like, where is that?
So, like, Veronica Beard, Vince, Lafayette, New York. Those are all great lines. And for me, it's like, I'm not going to, you know, I feel like the whole discussion about fast fashion, it's like, we can save that for another podcast.
That's a whole other hour.
It's a whole other thing. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, everyone wants to look nice. Everyone wants to feel great in their clothes. Everyone wants to look and feel fabulous in their skin. And everyone deserves to, regardless of your budget, regardless of the body that you live in and the size that you are. And so from that respect, as a stylist, I do appreciate fast fashion. But at the end of the day, it's like there's a reason it's so accessible, you know, to the masses. There's a reason why it's being mass produced, because they're able to do it, you know, at very little to no cost. And then, and they're not using sustainable fabrics. They're using these manufactured synthetic fabrics that literally, like, if you take a match to them, like, poof, like, it blows up your whole outfit. You're on fire, you know, right. Because it's like acetate, it's, you know, polyester. And again, not bashing on the rayon. I've studied fabrication for years and years and years. And, you know, every fabric has its place and it's, right. And its place in the fashion wheel. But, at the end of the day, I think as a stylist, it behooves me to really encourage my clients. It's incumbent upon me to encourage my clients to think about, like, quality and construction, to think about yes. fabrication, to think about dressing with intention. Less is more, quality over quantity.
I was just about to say quality over quantity. Yes. And there's such a push now of just having that less is more and having yeah. that capsule wardrobe
absolutely.
That you rotate in and out with the accessories and investing in the blazer you'll wow. have. And then if you're fluctuating size, maybe you get two different pairs of jeans from ASOS yeah. in two different sizes to, like,
yes.
have on hand. So, okay, if someone is trying to build that basic capsule wardrobe, what mm-hmm. are a few things that we need that should always be in our closet, the go-tos? We think we yeah. know, it's like the white t-shirt, but, like, what is your philosophy around
yeah.
this?
Yeah. So, I'm kind of wearing a variation. The reason I chose this outfit is because it's kind of a variation, of, like, it's like a classic look. It's like, I'm wearing, like, a little, these little sweater, like, cardigan jackets, knit jackets are really big for fall. And this is just kind of like this season's take on, like, the little black blazer. So I would say, like, you want to have really build up, like, your blazer arsenal, like your jackets, your outerwear. Styling is all about adding in that third piece. And I always tell my clients, I'm like, think about layering, think about adding in a third piece. It could be a belt. It could be a crossbody bag. It could be a beautiful silk scarf. It could be, you know, a statement hoop earring. It could be a blazer or a pashmina, but styling really is about adding in those layers and being intentional about accessorizing. And so I always tell clients, when you're standing in front of a mirror and you're getting dressed for the day, think about, like, what's the third piece I could kind of bring in here to kind of add the icing on the cake. And so I think it's important to really think about, like, those versatile jackets that can kind of take you from season to season. Maybe you throw it over your shoulder in the spring when it's a little bit cooler in the evening. You can layer it up with a wool scarf, like a blazer. You can layer it up with a wool scarf going into fall, going into winter. You can put a beautiful pea coat or a top coat on top of it. But I feel like you just cannot go wrong with having a couple really timeless blazers, a navy, a black, and you can switch it up. You can kind of, like, this is from H&M. Like, it looks like it's a little Versace or, like, Balmain jacket. It's not, it's H&M, but it's a bit more of, like, a trend piece. And so it's like, well, I don't want to spend $2,000, nor is that my budget, but I don't want to spend $2,000 on this blazer. It's a little trend. I want to sample for fall. And it's a little bit different from, like, the little, you know, double breasted black blazer that I have with the gold brass buttons. It's kind of fresh and kind of fun for fall, but it's still really versatile, and I can style this piece in a myriad of different ways. So I like to say, think about really building out, like, your outerwear and those third pieces. And then I think you can't go wrong with, like, a high-rise straight leg jean, no distressing, no fraying. I mean, like, kind of like the 90s mom jean, like, it's made its way back, but it's there's back. A reason. It's really, like, a mainstay and a staple. And, you know, whether it's 1985 or 2025, it's like, I feel like it's one of those jeans that, like, it might kind of like cycle in and out. Like the skinny jean was in and now it's kind of out again, but you cannot go wrong with like a clean straight leg jean and kind of like a medium rinse, like no distressing. You're going to stay safe that way, staying away from like the distressing and the raw hem. If it's clean, it's not going to look trendy. So I think premium denim is a really important thing to think about when you're building a capsule wardrobe. Investing, it doesn't have to be, you know, and I think investment, like the term investment is very relative. So for one person, that might mean a $900 pair of jeans. For another person, it might mean $250. For another person, it might mean $50. And that's okay. But I think like we were talking about earlier, like you just have to think about increasingly, I think we have to think about quality over quantity and focus on like the fabrication and the construction of the garment. And I will say that like, yeah, I love fast fashion. I'm wearing some fast fashion. But I will say that like, when I think about buying something for my closet, and I encourage my clients to think about the same thing, you have to think about, like, can I see myself wearing this a year from now? Are there 3 to 5 ways in which I can see myself styling this? Are there 3 to 5 places in which I envision myself wearing this? And if you know, like, man, I'm only going to wear it to that one event, or I can only think of like one way in which to style this, or no, I don't think I'm going to be wearing it a year from now, it's not worth the investment. You know, or go low with your investment. Go do the H&M, do the Fashion Nova, do the, you know, the ASOS, the Amazon. Nothing wrong with that. But if you know it, you're going to get a return on investment. You know that it's well made. It's not a synthetic fabric. It's well constructed. So it's wool, it's cotton, it's silk, it's satin. If you know it's well constructed and it's not a manufactured fabric and it's a classic silhouette, then... and you can think of 3 to 5 different ways in which to wear it, then that's a good argument right there for an investment piece.
That's such a good rule of thumb because it's decision fatigue and people freak out and they buy everything or they buy nothing or they, you know what I mean? So that's a really good rule of thumb as like the steps in a thought process of, if I'm buying this, is it an investment or is it not?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes. So we talked about some basics, must-have staple wardrobe. What are some trends that you're seeing that you think we're gonna see?
Yes. So red was like ubiquitous all over the runways for fall 2023 collections. And so Valentino, I mean, there's so many different designers who dabbled in it, but it's, you know, I don't know if you've heard the phrase dopamine dressing, but we've seen a lot of that like the last couple of years, especially with like the Barbie core trend, but really experimenting with these pops of color and this kind of monochromatic, like tonal, bold, colorful way of dressing. And red is like, I mean, red is a powerful, bold color, and not every woman feels like she can pull it off. And that's okay. Not every trend is for everybody. Like I always tell my clients, like, don't feel pressured with the trends to sample them all. It's like, it's kind of like, think of like a buffet. It's like, that might not be for me, pass. Maybe that's not for me, but I'll sample that. And that's what's so fun about trends. But I really love that red is, because I think it's one of those colors, like we kind of think of it in association with either Valentine's Day or Christmas, or maybe like red carpet, you know, like a black tie event, you might wear red. But we don't really see a lot of that anymore, like the head to toe red, like bold power dressing. It really, really makes an impact. So I just got back from Paris where I celebrated my 40th. It was fabulous. And I was like, red is not one of my like best colors, but I was like, I'm going to like have fun with this trend this fall and sample it. Like, I'm going to play with like a red lip, which I've never done before. I'm normally like a pink girl. And
the red lip looks so good on you.
Oh, you're so sweet. One of the girls from my team gave it to me. She was like, you can have this red lipstick. I think it's like Maybelline or L'Oreal, but it's fun. It's like a classic, like a very classic 1950s red. But this is a push for me because I'm normally like a pink girl. And I wore a red dress on my 40th birthday for my 40th birthday dinner.
That's so fun. You in a red dress in Paris.
Oh my God.
What a dream. What a dream.
I know. It was like so apropos. And like, so I'm loving red. I'm loving this kind of, we're seeing like this return to like, I mean, this has been happening for a couple of years, like the return to 90s fashion. So like the clunky, like lug sole loafers, like the Doc Martens, the Mary Janes, like we wore, I mean, that's what I was wearing in, you know, circa 1994, 95, 96. And so we were wearing these clunky black, like, loafers, and, like, we were wearing the knee-high socks, and, like, my freshman year of high school, like, kind of Clueless-esque, like, the pleated skirts, the knee-highs, the Mary Janes, those kind of little cohort suiting sets. It's, like, I'm loving all of that. Like, we saw a lot of that with the Barbie portrait, the advent of the Barbie movie, all these little, like, tweed, you know, Margot Robbie was wearing, she, like, head to toe Chanel and all of her red carpet events. But you're seeing a lot of fast fashion labels, like, knock those off. And they're so fun. It's all about, like, 80s and 90s power dressing, business suiting, the tweeds, you know, the houndstooth, the herringbones. And we're not just seeing neutrals. We're seeing colors, like pink tweed. And we're still seeing some of the Barbie core trend, you know, carrying over into fall. But I love that. I love the 80s and 90s silhouettes. I'm so here for, like, the clunky loafers. Here for the wide leg, like, baggy pants are back, that kind of gender fluid, like, masculine, feminine juxtaposition. I really leaned into that in Paris. Like, I am really inspired by Parisian and European fashion in general, but, Paris is like, I've come back and I've been like, oh yeah, like, this is, Paris is just going to be my mood all fall.
90s is my favorite fashion decade.
I think it also might be one of my favorites too.
For music, for everything. Have you watched the Supermodels Apple TV doc yet?
I've seen clips of it, but I haven't watched the whole thing.
Okay. It's so fascinating because wow. it goes kind of deep. It's just kind of a 4-episode deep dive into fashion, music, culture, what was going on in the 90s. And it's so fascinating.
Wow.
You would love it.
I can't wait.
I feel like there are so many CBD mushroom adaptogen brands out right now, but there are very few that have supplements that are actually formulated by doctors, which is why I trust Plant People and why it is my go-to for any CBD or mushroom supplement to help me with inflammation, focus, immunity, or calm. They are so trusted that they've been featured in Vogue, Forbes, and Goop. All of their powders and drops and gummies are formulated by doctors without sugar, food dyes, gelatin, and without high fructose corn syrup. They're also always lab tested. I love the sleep gummies, especially for travel, especially when I'm stressed out. They taste amazing and they actually knock you out. I am not kidding. They actually put you to sleep. I'm also loving their Suns Up Mushroom Coffee Mix. You can use it as a coffee replacement, but I'm a coffee gal, so I like to put it in my coffee to add extra support for energy and metabolism, to curb cravings, and to support my focus. So for 15% off any Plant People purchase at any time, use code GLOWUP at checkout. That's code GLOWUP at checkout for 15% off any Plant People product. Or for more information, just scroll down to the bottom of the show notes for this episode.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I'm like, the other thing I'm loving is, like, you know, you think of sweater dresses for fall and it's like, yeah, I mean, like, all right, like, you know, sweater, of course. It's like, what is Meryl Streep character in Devil Wears Prada say? She's like, florals for spring, groundbreaking, you know, it's like
flowers for spring.
But I do think we're seeing like some nuanced versions of the sweater dress, like cable knits. We're seeing a lot of like pattern and texture juxtaposition. We're still seeing like a lot of the cutouts off the shoulder, like asymmetry, that kind of circles in and out of fashion. But we saw a lot of that on the runways.
Okay. So when you are working with someone as a personal stylist, how do you coach them and teach them to dress for their own body type? Like, how do you communicate, okay, this is your body type, this is where we're going with it?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I always like to conduct an initial closet edit with the client. When I'm working with a client for the first time, it's always the service that I suggest we start with, because it's a great opportunity for me to kind of ascertain like what the client's sense of style is, who this woman is, how she wants to show up in the world, how she wants to present. And then also for me to take a look and like assess her body, like how does she carry her weight? How old is she? Has she been through menopause? Has she had children? Has she not? Has she had any major surgeries that have affected her body? Does she have any scars that she's self-conscious of? Does she have any skin disorders? I mean, like, these are all things that play into how comfortable women are in their clothing and like what parts of their body they're comfortable showcasing and which parts feel better to them disguising. And it also gives me a lot of insight into what hangups they might have. You know, like I said, styling is very, very personal. It's very, very intimate. And you start to establish a rapport and you start to have this consult and get to know the client. And those things pop up, you know, like, well, I've, you know, like I'm holding on to like my size 8 jeans because I wore them on my honeymoon. And I'm like, when was your honeymoon? Well, it was 18 years ago, but I'm going to lose the weight. And I'm going
Why
to
do we do again. This? Why do we do this? We hold All on the to the quote unquote, the skinny jeans in the back of the closet. It's not good for anyone.
No, it's abuse. It's honestly, it's abusive. Yes. It's abusive because it's like, this is who you should be. This is what you used to look like. Here's a reminder of that. That
every
you're having
day.
To contend with and look at every single day, which just makes you feel like shit about yourself, diminishes your self-worth, and it gives you this like impossible standard. Your body doesn't look like that, and that's okay. That was then, and this is now. And so I'm always like working with my clients, and I know it's easier said than done, but I'm always working with my clients to divorce yourself from that like magical aspirational size or that magical aspirational number on the scale or the size that you were when you got married, whatever you're trying to get back towards. I'm not saying you shouldn't have like your own personal health goals or like you should abandon your health or that, you know, you shouldn't be mindful of those
no,
things.
No, but in the meantime, you deserve to wear clothes and feel good. Not, 100%. You know, like in the meantime, today, no matter what you're working on with your goals, you deserve to feel good about yourself walking through the
world. Amen. 100%. And I think so many women are guilty of that. It's like, well, I'm going to reach out to you once I lose the weight, or I'm going to reach out to you. I'll invest in myself, you know, by hiring a stylist, or I'll take myself shopping, or I'll buy new clothes once I lose the baby weight or once I lose the 20 pounds. And it's like, but right now you need to show up for yourself. Right now you deserve to look and feel fabulous and confident in your skin. And you can just at the size you are right now, just as you are right now. And I think that's where I come in, because I think a lot of women, it can be really crippling and debilitating to be like, I have gained all this weight and my body doesn't look the way I think it should look, or maybe I don't know how to dress this new body, like a pregnant body. You've never lived in that body before. Postpartum body, postmenopause body, post weight gain body, whatever it is. And I think sometimes we just need a little bit of support and coaching there. And so, it's always done like with tact. Like I would never be like, you're this. You have to kind of read the client. And I think that is one of like my giftings is, I don't know if it's just being raised in the South, but like I tend to marry like truth with tact. And that's always my approach, like a little bit more honey, a little bit more sugar, but still telling the truth. And there's nothing wrong with going, you know, this is your body shape, this is your body type, and this is how weight is allocated. And most women are like, I don't know what that means. So I'm an apple. Like, what does that mean? Or I'm a pear. What does that mean? And there are different kind of terminologies, like, you know, you have pencil and ruler. It's different terms for the same body type, for the same
right.
body.
Well, it's so important because size is not the same thing as proportion. I have a friend who is the exact same height and size as me on paper, but she is all boobs and I am all hips and butt. Like, we have completely opposite proportions.
So would you say your pear shape?
And yes.
She's like an inverted triangle.
Yes.
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 Okay, totally.
But we would buy the same size because we're the same height and we're both kind of like big boned,
sure.
But things look completely different and we would not necessarily buy the same thing.
Yes.
So,
oh my gosh. And those are two totally, my direction, my style direction in terms of like silhouettes would be so different for a pear shaped woman compared to an inverted triangle. And I do think, I mean, that's always a part of that initial discussion and conversation that I have with clients. It's like, I'm getting to know them. Like, what's your story? What's your journey? What's your life like? Walk me through a day in the life. What are your goals and objectives in working with a stylist? What would you like to accomplish? But then it's also like, I'm taking inventory. I'm taking notes. Like, let's go through every single piece in her closet and help her decide, do we keep it? Do we toss it? Do we repurpose it? And why? And I'm walking them through that process. I'm right there with them. I'm touching the fabric. I'm speaking. I'm literally like dissecting the pieces, and not in a judgmental way, but like, so here's why this is a great sable. I love that you have this piece, you know, let's keep this. And here's why, you know, I'm going to recommend that we get rid of this. The color is washing you out. And here's why, you know, per our conversation earlier, you're an inverted triangle. So we want to get rid of like these big puff sleeves, because it's only going to like throw off your proportions and exacerbate that like kind of imbalance. And body type also, body shape and body type also have nothing to do with like your weight and what size you are. So that's the other thing, is like, you can be an apple and be 5'2" and a size 0. You can be an hourglass and be a size 24 and 5'10 or 5'11. So like, there are so many, it has nothing to do with the weight on the scale, the size on the label, your age. It's just so important. And it's kind of this old school approach to wardrobe styling. We saw it a lot in the 80s. People were getting like their colors done. And there was a lot of emphasis on body type. I don't think you probably see that as much with like celebrity styling. We don't see a lot of variation with size. Like, you have the occasional like Sofia Vergara might be like a size 6'8", or like, you know, is it America Ferrera?
Uh-huh.
You know, and like Ashley Graham, it's like, you know, sure. Like, there are some plus size celebrities, but you really don't see a lot of variation.
And right. So a lot of times it's the Nicole Kidman and the Margot Robbie, and it's the long length and very, very teeny.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like blonde, 5'10", leggy, size 2. Like, and so I think with personal styling, kind of going back to the beginning of the conversation, as opposed to, you know, being an editorial stylist or celebrity stylist, like having those conversations, like, let's talk about your body type. Do you know what your body type is? And a lot of women are like, I have no idea. That's why I hired you. But some women do, but then they're like, but I don't know how to dress it. Or I don't know how to like put outfits together. Or like, Annie, can you walk me through the different silhouettes and the different shapes I should be looking for? Like, what sort of skirts, like what shape, what silhouette, what sort of pants would look best on my body type? And that's where I view like the coaching aspect of styling. It's like, okay, now we've identified your body shape, your body type. Again, it has nothing to do with your weight or your size. And now I can walk you through, like, these are going to be the best silhouettes when it comes to looking at trousers, when it comes to looking at jeans. And these are the ones to avoid based on your particular body type. And I'm a firm believer, I have a background in art. And so I studied proportion and, you know, depth. And it's like, I really believe that, like, there's something so beautiful about a full, like, I think about Oprah. Like, I don't know who her stylist was back in the day when she was at her heavier weight, but she always had these like impeccably tailored, I mean, like, impeccably tailored to her body, beautiful suits, beautiful garments, beautiful chic dresses. And she, you know, this is when she was probably a 5'16", 5'18", but they always looked, they made her body look so snatched.
That's such phenomenal. A good example, because that is such a good example of Oprah has had size fluctuations. She's been really honest about her journey, mm-hmm. But she has always been a public figure and she has always looked great in her clothes.
Phenomenal. And it's like, that is a great, again, I wish I knew who her stylist, I'm sure she's worked with various ones over the years, but her costume designer, I'm sure she has a whole team, but it's like, whoever was in charge of her image and styling her on screen nailed it.
And something that I started doing, and what I tell kind of like my in-between friends, is sometimes I would order something. I mean, this is pre-pregnancy. I would order something in a size 14, a size bigger. And if I really wanted to invest in it, and take it to a tailor to get it fit to my body. And those are the pieces that I'm going to have forever because yes. it's tailored exactly to my proportions. Like when I wanted to invest in something, that's what I would end yes. up doing. It's so helpful.
That's something I tell my clients all the time. We tend, like I said, as women, we tend to be married to one particular size. And I always tell my clients, I'm like, that's a unicorn, divorce yourself from it. And I'm like, let's focus on, we all have like a certain, this is where it goes back to knowing your body type and why that's so important. But like, think of the largest part of your body. That might be your hips. It might be your chest, your shoulders, depending on your body shape. But you have to buy for the largest part of your body and then have the rest taken in an altar. And women have a really hard time with that. So like, that's another part where I come along and coach. Cause I'm like, that's society telling you like, you have to be a medium. You can't be a large. You can't be a large. Who cares? You might be an extra small in your booty, but you might be an extra large throughout your shoulders. And that's okay. And so, or you might be, maybe you're an 8 through your hip, but you're 12 in your shoulders. You're going to buy the 12 and we're going to have the rest taken in through your hip, your tummy to be a size 8. But then that way the fabric isn't pulling across your shoulders. So like the importance of fit and tailoring and alterations, like that's something I could get on a soapbox about that. I feel very.
Oh my gosh. Me too. Yes. I mean, I've been a fit model for 10 years. So it's really, really interesting. And, you know, a size 12 fit model for different brands will all have different proportions, which is why you are a different size in every brand. So it's just the size thing. I feel the same way. We gotta like throw it out the window and make it mean absolutely nothing. Annie, this has gone by so fast. I feel like I could talk to you for another 2 hours. Before I let you go, I just have some fun rapid fire questions that I ask everyone just to get to know you a little bit more.
Yes.
So first of all, what is your favorite beauty hack? Do you have a fave?
I do. So I'm very much like an all or nothing girl. So I'm either like fully dolled up, full beat, full glam, like false lashes. I have lash extensions on now. Or I'm nothing. And there's like no in between. I have done that for a long time. I've done like off on, like with my makeup. So like one day, like when I know I'm client facing, it's like, I'm like this. The next day I might be working from home or I might be like on set. And so I'm either tinted moisturizer or maybe a little vitamin C serum, or I'm just nothing. And for me, like people, and I'm not being like toot, but like I have clear skin and people are like, what do you do? And I'm like, I swear to God, it's like that I give my face a break.
Breaks. I do the same thing. You're seeing my in between right now, which is tinted moisturizer,
which is
mascara.
Gorgeous. Which is
very,
gorgeous.
Very sweet. But I always, if I'm not seeing anyone, oh my gosh, it is skincare. It is sunscreen, sunscreen moisturizer, and just leave it alone. That's such a good one. And I am right there with you.
I just like, and in the South, women wear, like women don't go to the grocery store without putting on like their full beat. And it's like, no. I'm like, that's the secret to having good skin for Annie Hayward is like give. It's kind of like one day on, one day off, one day on, one day off.
I agree.
Do full beat every day or I start breaking out.
I agree. I would rather have clean, hydrated skin any day
100%.
Than full makeup. Well, because when you do it too much, it starts to feel dirty and clogging.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's when I know that like my pores start getting clogged and it's like, it starts getting dry. I just think my skin replenishes itself and does so much better when I give it like some breathing room a couple times.
Such a good one. And that's, me too.
Yes.
Do you have favorite or best advice you've ever received?
I was really moved by Glennon Doyle's book. It's called Untamed. I read it a couple years ago.
Changed my life.
Literally. And that was like Bible for me when I was going through like my healing journey, my like mental health healing, my physical health healing, my weight loss journey. And she doesn't even necessarily say this, but I think it's just the whole premise is like showing up as you're like, first of all, not abandoning yourself. What does it look like to show up for yourself? And like walking away from anything that doesn't feel like it's in alignment with who you are and walking away from things that no longer feel like the most true and most beautiful expression of who you are. And I think for me, like that's a great way to encapsulate authenticity. And there's this Dr. Seuss quote that I love and I always circle back to, which is be who you are and say how you feel, and those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. And I love that. And I think it's very much like in alignment with Untamed. But just I don't know. I try to like live by those things every day and practice those things every day. It's a struggle, but I really try to lean into that. Just showing up as like authentic Annie and like knowing that like when I'm leaning into who I really am and I'm not putting on airs and I'm not wearing masks, I'm just being honest and vulnerable and real. Like it attracts that same energy. It attracts those same sort of women, which is why you and I connected and which is why like your mom and I think connect. Like, even if you're not, we don't know each other intimately, Alexandra, but like, you know, like when you know, when you see another authentic woman. And so like, that's all I know to do is just to keep showing up as my authentic self and walk away from things that aren't in alignment with who I am, set boundaries, say no, and just continue to show up as like my truest and most beautiful self.
That is a really good one. And also we got a book recommendation out of that. Okay. Is there anything you'd like to speak out about? Like, would you like to bring attention or awareness to something, a charity, yeah, an Instagram account, a person we should know about?
I feel really strongly about speaking up and out about mental health. I think I had my own mental health issues. I've struggled with depression and anxiety. I struggle with postpartum depression, and those are things that like they've ebbed and flowed in my life. And there've been seasons where I, you know, they haven't been present. And then there's seasons where they're like my constant companions. And, I think because like being in, you know, being influencers, whatever you want to call us, I hate to use that term, but like being in the public eye, like being a stylist.
You have a visual presence in media and social media. Yes. I hate that word too.
But it's, having a following, engaging with women, and like all my followers are women. I just think it behooves me. Like it's incumbent upon me to kind of like pull back what's the curtain, I guess, on Instagram. I mean, I think everything is so heavily edited and everything is airbrushed. And like, listen, I'm guilty of it too. And like, you know, you model and like, you know, it's like not all that glitters at gold is gold and not all that we see on Instagram is reality. I think most of it isn't. And so like when I can speak openly and honestly about the not so glamorous things and the kind of messy things and the things that we like to sweep under the rug and maybe like things that are socially taboo, I will speak about them because I want to normalize them. And I want my followers to feel emboldened and to feel like solidarity with me and to feel like their own mental health issues are normalized. One of the most moving things to me about like what I do isn't like, I'm not motivated by like, of course, success is important and I have my own goals and my own definition of what that looks like and what that means. And I want my business to grow and generate revenue. I'm a businesswoman. But at the end of the day, like the thing that's most fulfilling to me, other than like seeing a smile on my face and my client like feeling fabulous and feeling confident in her skin, is when women come up to me like randomly and like at Starbucks or I'll be like the mall and somebody will come up to me and be like, I just want to thank you for being so open about your postpartum depression, or I want to thank you for being open about, you know, suicidal ideation or whatever it is that like I've shared. Like, and it's like in that moment, like feeling seen and feeling like you see that person, to me, that is like, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm going to keep speaking openly about these things. And
yeah,
maybe some would consider it unprofessional. I don't know.
No, but this is why I think you're so cool, is because you're a stylist, which a lot of people would see that as having more of a superficial idea or view of the world. You're adorning yourself on the outside with things. But how you actually work and approach life is from the inside out, is from the inner work out, like with your own journey. You're starting with your inner work, your mental health. With your clients, you're starting with their story, their insecurities, their body image, what they want.
Right.
Not jumping right to what looks good.
Yes.
It's really a fascinating combination. I just think it's really cool and special. Yeah. So how can we work with you? Where can we find you on Instagram? Where can we find you online? All of those things.
Oh, I love it. Honestly, Instagram. I mean, Styling, follow us on Instagram. There's lots of behind the scenes content that we're posting, outfit of the days. I try to do a lot of interactive stories. I have a great team of women that I work with, and it's just all the fashion goodness, but it's also real and authentic and approachable, and It's really important that my brand remains that way. I always want to be accessible and approachable.
Thank you so much. You're the best. This was so fun and so informative. I feel like I learned so much.
I'm just honored and humbled that you reached out.
Thank you.
So happy and grateful that we connected.
You're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Thank you for listening to Glow Up and Speak Out. If you liked this episode, it would mean so much if you could follow, rate, and review the show on Apple or Spotify. And for more content, make sure to check out our Instagram at Glow Up and Speak Out.